This is Dr. Laura Calkins of the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, initiating an oral history interview with Paula D. Wright. Today's date is the 10th of August, 2005, and both Paula and I are in the interview room in the Special Collections Building on the campus of Texas Tech in Lubbock. And Paula, I just want to confirm with you that it's all right with you that we make this interview available to researchers through the Vietnam Archive.
It's perfectly all right with me.
Okay, thank you. And also to clarify that in the time that you served in Vietnam, you were serving as Paul D. Wright.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to confirm those things. And let's start off with asking about your growing up. Where were you born and when?
I was born in Lubbock, St. Mary's Hospital, what is
Godbolt Center.
February 9th, 1950. Lived 6 months in, while we were living in Post. Dad was teaching and operating a case dealership down there.
Mm-hmm.
And lived down there for 6 months. Lived in La Mesa for a little while. Lived in Littlefield for a little while. Lived in our farm in Anton for 4 years. 4 years and one day. Well, I can remember that because we moved on my fourth birthday onto the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then on my eighth birthday and so many, we moved here to Lubbock. And then I grew up here in Lubbock, considered it home. Graduated from Coronado High School May 30th, 1969.
And Paula, tell me a little bit about Lubbock and what you remember as a high school student in your junior and senior years in terms of the political environment here in town, 1968-1969. What was it like here in Lubbock? We know what it was like in other places like Berkeley, California.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, Lubbock was a little bit different. We've always been kind of conservative.
Sure.
But we have done a 180 degree change because when I was growing up, this is a Democratic town.
Mm-hmm.
You city council, mayor, everybody was Democrat. Preston Smith was lieutenant governor. In fact, in 1966-67. I was in the Coronado High School band, and we were Preston Smith's official band in his inauguration.
Cool.
As lieutenant governor. So we got to go down to Austin and march in the parade.
That's cool.
And we were presented on the Senate floor. I think Matt McAllister was the senator then.
Mm-hmm.
Who used to have a KSEL radio. AM 950. Let's see. There wasn't. We didn't here at Texas Tech and everything. We did have the ROTC. The ROTC here, as far as I remember, we never had any of the break-ins or explosions or anything like that. Really, the peace activists were kind of. They were. If you want to say discriminated against, they were really, everybody would be, you know.
Opposed to them.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about the war? You clearly knew it was going on. What did you think back then? This is way before you entered the service, but as a high school student, a lot of folks.
Back then, I was very gung-ho about it. We had a. I still think this.
Mm-hmm.
We had a compact with them, and we had to. I think if we did not honor that compact, then why should the other allies that we have, especially per se at that time, say like NATO?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why should they honor us if we turned and ran in Vietnam?
So the United States had a duty to South Vietnam,
right? And I thought that. And I still think that we was over there trying to spread freedom and everything because I remember when I was in eighth grade, we studied communism. And my final question, essay question for the year, is what do you think about communism? Mm-hmm. And I would put it in. I said communism is the devil, and or is kind of like the devil. And I think we should do anything we can do to stop it.
Wow.
And I still feel this way. I've changed my mind a lot since. I will say this: I think Afghanistan was Russian Vietnam, as far as per se the other soldiers. Mm-hmm. I'm looking from the soldiers' point of view, not from the government's point of view.
Mm-hmm. That they were involved in a war over there that wasn't popular in the Soviet Union when it was going on.
Well, definitely not popular in Afghanistan.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask about your thinking about what you would do after high school. Did you have a plan?
I had a full set of plans. I was going to make the military my career.
Okay.
I wanted to be a pilot. At first, I thought about going to Tech ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I applied with the Air Force Academy to go to the academy. It's funny, my dad was a math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not very good at math.
I didn't get any of that.
And I mean, really, it wasn't until I grew up and I got out of the military and went back to electronic school, and I had an instructor that the way he taught made it all open up to me.
Oh, is that right?
You know.
What was his name? Do you remember?
I can't remember. But anyway, he said there's two ways to teach. A student's way. How do you get the answer?
Mm-hmm.
Teacher's way. This is how you get the answer. And when he presented it both ways, he made it interesting.
And it made sense to you.
And it made sense to you.
You know now.
Excuse me for snorting.
Of course, there's a lot of research on different learning styles, but back then that was actually pretty innovative.
That was 1975. Yes, that was very innovative.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a public school, it was a private school.
Where was that?
This is Bellenhouse Schools at DeVry Tech at Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And he was teaching, I can't remember the name, the book says, heck, I just saw the book the other day. Anyway, it was about electronics for technicians, mm-hmm. electronic technicians.
Now, you wanted to go into military service.
Yes.
Did you want to go to college?
Yes, I did. I thought about it. Like I said, I applied for the academy.
Right.
And my mom didn't know what... I did not know this, but my summer of my junior year, my mom got a letter from the Coast Guard Academy. And she sent my name off to the Coast Guard Academy.
Is that right?
And looking for future cadets, you know, or pleat. Well, I don't know what the Coast Guard calls them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swabs or, you know, if cadets is West Point. But anyway, and I was in my senior year of high school 2 weeks into the summer. And we got called, there was 9 of us, and we got called down to Mrs. Andrews' office, who was the senior counselor's office. And they'd want this Coast Guard ensign, lieutenant. And one of the guys came up and kind of joked. He says, well, says... Is the bus waiting for us to take us to basic training, and everything? But anyway, I did not know this, but Mom sent it off, and they talked to me, and the whole thing about it, if I was taking ICT my senior year,
which is
industrial cooperative training.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And if I had not been in that, or if it had been like the first week, I could have got out of that, and you know. Gone, you know, to work have the other classes that I needed to get into the, and the Coast Guard Academy is different from the Naval Service Academies because there's not a competition like what there is for the service academy.
Right. There's not the congressional nomination.
There's not congressional or anything. In fact, but anyway, you can get, you can go from enlisted and you can go to the academy. Mm-hmm. And get an army appointment.
Was that of interest to you, the Coast Guard? Had you not thought?
The thing that was nice about the Coast Guard, they said I could fly. I wanted, when I was in the ninth grade, we had to pick the two careers I wanted to be. And I picked, my parents, my name was, they named after St. Paul and King David. So they dedicated my life to God. So I was going to be a flying preacher.
Cool.
You
had some good ideas here. Got close to flying.
We'll
get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But
anyway. No, I mean, that was the main thing. So, I mean, I was going to be, like I said, either a pastor or, and my dad came up and he says, man, he said, you follow me, you get in careers that don't pay the money, what I mean?
That's true.
And, money's not everything, but it's nice to have. But that is why, because they told me that I would be, go in guaranteed as a aviation officer.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But that didn't work out. How did you come?
That didn't work out because I couldn't change. It would have meant me going to summer school. And at that time,
yeah.
I was ready. I was ready.
Well, did you ever receive a draft notice?
No, I didn't. I volunteered. I take that back. A draft note? No. I didn't receive the draft notice, but a week, the day after I graduated, the 30th of May,
right.
The 1st of June, I got my draft card changing me to 1A.
Mm-hmm.
So you... whatever student was, 1-4 or whatever it is. Because, I stayed back in the 4th grade. So I was already 19 years old when I graduated.
Okay.
So I had my last 18 months of school, I was registered for the draft.
Right.
Of course, I had a, knock on wood, they weren't drafting non-high school graduate. If you're going to high school, they wouldn't draft you.
Right. But as soon as you graduated.
But as soon as I graduated, the day after I graduated, I got my draft note, or reclassification.
And so, did you then make the decision that you wanted to volunteer?
Well, I was, Texas Tech, we're just opening the first year. I'm kind of digressing. I'm getting
that's
to that
okay.
point. The law school was going to open up in August of '69
mm-hmm.
as the first class.
Mm-hmm.
I was accepted. I was one of the first 35 students accepted to Tech. So I was pre-registered and all this. And the reason, because I didn't know what I wanted. I knew I wanted to fly, And I had even talked to other Central Texas College. They had a professional pilot program. And I talked to them about it,
mm-hmm.
And basically, and everything, no offense against Dad and everything, but did the same thing to me as he did to my sisters. I moved to Lubbock, Texas, so we would be close to Texas Tech. I graduated from Texas Cadet. If you want to go to a different college, you can come up and,
He wasn't going to make that easy. Right?
Well, I mean, he'd help, but yeah, you understand what I'm talking
sure.
about.
Sure.
So really, I didn't know. I thought about a history major because I always liked history. And he came up and he said, well, why don't you be a lawyer because you love to argue? So I said, okay, fine. And I had applied, waited too long. I didn't find out to get a ROTC scholarship, either Air Force or Army. I would have had to apply the year before. So, I would have just, if I'd gone to Tech and got an ROTC scholarship, it had just been for 3 years.
I see.
Instead of 4 years.
Yeah.
And really, by the time I graduated and everything, I was tired of school. I didn't want to, you know, I just knew I wanted to get the heck away from Lubbock and do so. And really, I thought, well, you know what? And I had talked, like, in February of 69, I'd gone down and talked to the Army recruiter about the one officer program. And WAFT, one officer flight candy, and one officer flight training. So I had already made up my mind, kind of. And of course, Dad's thinking he was in World War II. Luckily, he never had to go overseas.
That
was a sore point between me and Dad, because he got prostate cancer, and I kept telling him and everything. I said, "Look, I said, you're a veteran. You served during a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might have to go down to the VA and sit down there all day to be seen. I'll go down there with you." No, that's different. You're in combat. You know, you deserve it. No, I don't deserve it better. You deserve it just as much as I do.
So he felt, because he hadn't gone overseas and
right.
wasn't in combat,
right.
that he really shouldn't access VA benefits?
Right. And, of course, think about it, he might not have qualified for it, because they had what he would have been a Class C, which is economic. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had the farm out here at Anton and the property here, so he might not have. But what I was thinking about, Mom and him both had cancers. And like his pill, one pill of his alone was like $75 a month.
Thanks.
And so, I mean, you know, I borrowed money from him one time. I said, "Well, I'll tell you what," he said, "pay you back, I'll pay for your medication." I never did that again. If I borrowed money, I paid the money back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I found
that
very, yeah.
That's actually interesting that he had that feeling. What year was this about?
This is 86, 87.
Is your father still with us, or
no? He passed away.
Mm-hmm. What unit of military was he in?
He was Army Air Corps.
He was Army Air Corps.
He was.
Where did he serve?
He was drafted in. Went to Wichita Falls. He was drafted here in Lubbock. It's mm-hmm. really interesting story. When he was 6 years old, he got his eye. One of his eyes, I can't remember right or left now, but anyway, knocked out by a boomerang, homemade boomerang. So whenever Dad was a school teacher down at Crane, Texas, and he was not only a coach, but he was a math teacher.
Right.
Well, they came up and they told him, they said, "You won't get drafted, because that's critical, quote, critical
work,
mm-hmm. work, you know, occupations."
Mm-hmm.
He tried to go. He went all the way to Dallas, and I saw the paperwork. We still got the paperwork on him. Went all the way to Dallas, Texas, tried to go volunteer to go into the service and everything, and they turned him down. 2 weeks after they turned him down, they drafted him.
The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing.
So anyway, they came out, and he told me, he says, when he got up to Wichita Falls, up to the base of... No, they took him to Bourbonnet. And they sworn in Burt Manette, and he stayed there overnight or something. And they come out and they asked him, they said, "What do you want to do?" And he says, "I don't care. Give me a rifle." You know, at this time he didn't, you know. Before, you know, he might have had a choice, you know. And, of course, with him having the fade eye, they weren't going to put him in infantry.
Right.
And then they said, "Oh, we say you're a math teacher." And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Would you like to teach it? Have you ever done any flying?" I said, "No." And then they said, "Well, would you like to be a teach pilots how to do instrument navigation?" So that's what he did. He lucked out.
Where was he?
He was at Chinook Field for training, and then he was in Mariana, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it was so critical to have people do the teaching.
He got notified to go to Europe, and he said if he'd gone over there, he would never flown because of his eye.
Sure, I'm sure.
You know, but he would have stayed, you know, done maintenance or you know something, you know. And in fact, he sent my he was in Greensboro, North Carolina, and he sent my mom and my oldest sister home. And a day or two days before he was supposed to ship out, they canceled his orders. And then so they brought him back, or he brought them back to Greensboro. And and then right before Europe ended and everything, they put the listing up, and his name was redlined right above his name. They had so many openings, and he was the, you know, redlined. So I mean, twice.
Wow.
He got, but I mean that it's really something. He's I had a uncle that was in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
He was on he was wounded on Guam.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow. So military stuff was running in the
family? Oh, yeah. I have two brother-in-laws that were in the military.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest brother-in-law was career.
Oh, is that right?
From out here at Reese.
Oh, okay. Air Force, then.
Yeah, Air Force.
Uh-huh.
And I just knew I didn't want, you know, of course, my sister's trying to get me either. And before I went in, I went out to San Diego. And my brother-in-law, Bob, was headed out that way for training. He was going to Guam, and they got out to Phoenix, Arizona, or Tucson, and their car broke down. The motor went out on the car, and so Bob had to go ahead and go on in and report in. And so my sister flew, paid for my plane trip out there and back. So I'd be with her, and I flew to Tucson, and she picked me up, and then we went to Coronado Island,
right.
San Diego.
Right.
I did get to see how the Marine. I did see MCRD, so I knew I did not want to go to the Marines.
Well, it sounds like the Army was where you were going to be.
The main reason I went to the Army because they guaranteed me that I would fly.
And the recruiter did this?
Yes.
Okay. When did you actually then volunteer? Was it right after you graduated?
Right.
Just as soon as that reclassification came in, you were like, I better go ahead and volunteer?
Well, I went. I had an old girlfriend that I went and spent a week with after graduation. And it's really funny because I was dating my ex-wife at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, we weren't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went down there, and I had made arrangements to be with Kay. A month before, she called me up and got talking and everything. She said, hey, why don't you come on out? And I don't know if I say this or not, but anyway, you can edit it if you want to. I guess I turned into Dutch uncles and everything, because all my old girlfriends call me up and everything. They have prop boy problems.
Oh, that. Now you're the source of it.
So I guess I'm the kind of girlfriend, or you want to say, but anyway, I went out there and I spent several, you know, weeks with him, and I came back and I'd already got a letter from the Army recruiter saying to come talk to him and everything. And one of the wife of one of the coaches that Dad worked with, she knew that I had planned on going in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had told her, but she didn't tell her husband, and she didn't tell Dad, you know what I mean?
Right, so...
I mean, you know, there was a few people, you know, I had it in my mind, because like I said, I knew I was ready, and I was, you know, I was ready to do something.
And so is it accurate to say that you entered service then in like June or July of 69?
I entered June 30th of 69.
And where did
I'm sorry about that. You asked me. That's the third time you asked
me. No, it's okay. I was wondering where you went for basic.
I went to basic at El Paso, Texas. They lied. First time I got lied by the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you wait 2 weeks and everything, said if you go ahead and sign them now, you can be... You'll be in the last group that's basic training class that's going into El Paso over the next 3 months, and your folks will only be 300 miles away, and they can come down and say, yeah,
I had three other classes after I got there coming in. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, first, you know.
69.
The Army right to you? Yeah.
I know, shocking. Well, how did basic training go?
It sucked. Rude awakening. You know, I'm sorry. I didn't like my dad yelling at me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can understand why they do that. But why the physical violence? I have never.
What did you see? What by physical violence, what do you mean?
No, coming up, standing there, and sergeants come along hitting you in the gut or you know, grabbing you and throwing you or, you know, taking you out behind the barn or something like that. So, my senior year, I weighed 175 pounds starting out. Mm-hmm. When I graduated, I weighed 128 pounds. And I didn't work out. I worked as a welder's apprentice. So I guess lifting, even with the chain, lifting that steel and everything worked it off. Or maybe just me working, I ate right, or, you know what I mean. But anyway, I lost.
Good. So
40,
you were
40, 50. Well, I take that back. I was about 180 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a hefty guy.
But not by the time you were at basic.
And basic training, I weighed 125 pounds, 128 pounds. And my drill sergeant, Nick Patrizzi, he made me the road guard. You're a fat boy. We're going to put you road guard where you have to run all the time to get that fat out of you. And I said, if you think I'm fat now, you should have seen me 9 months ago. You sassing me, asshole!
Did he really say stuff like that?
Huh?
Did he really say stuff like that? Wow. Did you think maybe you made a mistake?
You know what? I looked at it. You know what? In 6 months' time, I'll be an officer and he'll have to call me sir.
There you go. There you go. Good attitude.
Well, you know what I mean? Another thing, made the mistake of being one of the OCS possible candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeants, every sergeant I ever met in the Army, career sergeant I ever met, and some of them, I believe, because they would have made good officers. But, I mean, in the first 6 months I met, every sergeant says, I could be an officer if I wanted to. And I learned very quickly after getting eating dust or desert,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
But anyway, you know, some of them and everything. But Nick Patrizzi was a Marine DI, and he got $10,000 to come into there and transfer over to the Army to start the DI program.
Wow.
And so he still thought he was a gyrene.
So he was going to make you guys pay.
He was, well, I mean, you know, he treated us. And, okay, yes, you know, maybe the Marine, you know, I'm sorry, I don't care, you know, the Army came up and everything, said, you know, like General Patton said, or, you know, American soldiers' job is to make the other son of a bitch to bleed for their country.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. This stuff of, you know, infantry dealers follow me, you know what I mean? Yeah, we'll follow you. You go out there and you get your rear end, you know what I mean? But I mean, all this deal and everything. Well, you have to take it. Yes, there are certain times where you have to take it at no matter what the risk. There's another thing. You're taking that hill because some rear end told you to take it.
Right. Without... Any
you know,
real,
without
clear,
any real clue or anything like
right,
that.
Right.
It was nice because about a week after I got in basic, he became field first, which is meant was he's in charge of making sure all the training was lined up and we get the truck buses when we're supposed to. And sometimes they screwed up, and there were several times we went through chow, like they said. Regulation states that we have to make you 3 meals a day. Don't mean you have to eat 3 meals a day. you know, stand in, get your chow, and then the drill sergeant stand there and tell you to dump it out, and you go get on the bus or on the car or truck or pedal car or whatever you want to, whatever you were going to. Mm-hmm. So I can understand, you know, I mean, if it was the CQs was supposed to wake us up an hour earlier and he didn't, that was his fault. That wasn't ours.
Right.
But the old expression, feces flow downhill.
Well, where did you go to advanced?
I went to advanced Fort Rucker, Alabama.
How did that go?
That was great. That was really what it is and everything. That was a lot better because I was learning what I wanted to learn. You know, I did the job.
Yeah.
I came up and took a flight test, and they came up, and there were three of us, and they said, one-third, only one of you will go. You know, it's historically one-third. Well, I could have taken the test again and passed it, you know. But anyway, I just said, I'll just go ahead and go in. And, you know, if I go as crew chief, I'll fly anyway. You know, where if I door gunner? Because, I mean, the life of a door gunner, you know, the life of a sniper is 10 seconds. The life of a door gunner was 30 seconds. You know, so I mean, you know, I had three times as much life expectancy as a sniper was,
you know,
a point man was, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
And that that was the scuttlebutt going
right,
along.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, were the people who were doing the instruction, had they been to Vietnam?
Most of them. We had two different deals. We had I'll relate it to what the civilian mechanics go through, like a general, where you go through the first three weeks you go through, you learn how to read, you know, the manuals and how to look stuff up, and we had a little bit how to do a little bit of sheet metal, how to, you know, do the rivets and stuff like that, you know, other just general stuff.
Right.
And then after that, we were sent over to our advanced company, and all of our instructors had been in Vietnam.
Did they tell you guys stuff about it?
Oh, they told it. And it was really nuts because they told us, they says, you have to learn this stuff here, but yeah, I'll tell you this, as soon as you get to Vietnam, forget what you learned because you'll do it the way you have to do it there. You know. Which is true. But I mean, I still remember the torque values on certain bolts. I still, you know, I mean, you never forget that. That's drilled into you.
Mm-hmm. And they were, just to clarify, they were, for future listeners, they were training you in helicopter maintenance.
Yes, UH-1s.
UH-1s Hughes. Only?
Hughes, yes, UH-1s only.
Okay.
But a lot of it and everything went in to other, you know, helicopters and helicopter. You know, it operates right, the same thing.
Right.
You know.
The different models.
The different models and everything. I mean, you know, you take a UH-1, or excuse me, you take a OH-1 and a UH-1, they're going to take off the same way.
Right.
They're going to fly forward the same way. They're going to hover the same way. You know.
Right.
The principles are the same, but the specifics for the maintenance and everything like this is different.
Now, when you finish advanced training,
mm-hmm,
did you feel like you were ready to,
yes,
take care of a helicopter?
And I was an honor graduate.
Is that right? Well, did your folks or any family come along to this? I mean, it must have been a ceremony.
No, they didn't. Dad was teaching at that time.
I see.
Now, Mom and Dad, the fourth week we was in basic, Mom and Dad came down and saw me.
Mm-hmm.
To El Paso and saw me.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come up for my graduation because it was on a Friday, and Dad couldn't have got off. That kind of pissed me off a little bit. I mean, he wasn't coaching anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can take, you know, my goddad, you know, but yes, it pissed me off, but I can understand. Well, we just saw you, you know, 4 weeks ago.
Right, right. But still.
You know what I mean? But I mean, still, you know.
Yeah.
Well, would you have been here if I went leaving basic and going straight to Vietnam?
Yeah.
You
well, did you see them after you finished,
yes,
advance? Did you, yeah, come back here for a little, for a leave?
Yes, I came back here for 30 days.
Right.
Got engaged. And I remember I was leaving.
the old Lubbock Airport. The what is it? A Silent Wings Museum now.
Uh-huh.
And my ex, Barbara Jean, was going to beauty school. And so we went by, and, you know, Mom, I guess my it was my mom and dad. And I can't remember my sister. Was my sister here, or had she gone to Guam? I can't remember if my sister was still here or she was waiting to go to Guam to be with her husband. Anyway, but I know it was my mom, my sister, and my mom, dad, and my grandmother. And so I told them and everything. And, of course, they weren't too thrilled about, well, me going to Vietnam, but also me getting married, you know, because, of course, they were looking at the deals. Well, you know, what happens if you get over there and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, you decide you shouldn't have been married, or you get killed, or you get maimed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, of course, 35 years of experience, you know, I can understand their feelings.
Right.
You know, but anyway, I told them and everything, and I said, I want to stop by and get Mom Barbara Jean. And so that Mom started, and I said, well, I'll just put it this way. If you don't want to stop by, fine, I'll get a cab, and Barbara Jean and I will go out to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took her, and I remember right as they called the plane and everything, I wrapped my arms around her, and kissed her. Stupid, I know. Please, Mr. Custard, I don't want to go.
Yeah, but it didn't work out that way, did it?
Well, you know, it's really kind of funny because I ended up in Mr. Custard's outfit the second time I was over there.
Yeah, that's right. That's a little ironic, isn't it?
You know, so, I mean, you know, I might have been 18 months ahead of time.
Yeah, but it worked out.
You know what I mean? But it worked out
yeah.
and everything. So, but...
Well, what was the trip over to Vietnam like? Do you remember that?
Long and boring.
Where did you leave from?
We left from, I reported at Oakland. We left from Travis Air Force Base. And I'll say this, every time I got transferred, I was very lucky. Because usually most guys I know of and everything, you get transferred, you know, if you're not a E6 or above.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where you have an assigned unit and everything like this. You get put on detail, you know.
That's right.
You know, details.
That's right.
Man, I got there. I left 3 days. I was supposed to be there the 16th of January. Report 16th, no later than midnight the 16th. My aunt from, of course, I was going to leave here the 16th and go, you know. Well, my aunt from California called me up and says, when you report? And I said, the 16th. When you come in here? And I said, well, I'll be there at 16th. And they said, no, we want to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And went to die because, and the uncle I told you about that was wounded in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
It was his sister. So I got to talk to him. I got to talk to my other uncle. And they talked about, my other uncle was in Korea.
Okay.
So I got to talk to them about, I'm sorry if you hadn't been, you can talk. You can't talk about combat unless you've been in combat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, where did you arrive?
Okay, I left Oakland, went to Anchorage, Alaska. This is in January of 1970. Had to walk. Every time I went to Vietnam, we landed at Anchorage. And they always come up and say, well, the Skyjet is not working. So we had to walk from the airplane to the airport. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I mean, you know, January. My God, it was 4 below, and I just had jungle fatigue, Joe. You know what I mean? You know, yes, it might be 50 yards, but I mean, that's 50 yards. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And so, I mean... But and I didn't know how because I got out and everything like this, you know, and I thought, that's about 32, 33, comparing it to year.
Right.
And then on the way back, you know, the one of the stewardesses were flight attendants.
It's okay.
Was
Told us, it's a warm day. It's 4 below 0.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. Went to Anchorage, spent an hour there. Went from Anchorage to Japan, spent an hour there. And then we landed in Vietnam at midnight on January the 18th.
Mm-hmm. Did you go into Tan Sanh?
And, yep. Mm-hmm. No, we didn't. We landed at Binh Hoa.
Okay.
At that time, they were still going to, it wasn't until 72 they stopped Tan Sanh.
Mm-hmm.
Or started going directly into
Tan Sanh instead of
They were going to Binh Hoa.
Mm-hmm.
And why I know 72 is because I was at Binh Hoa when they stopped.
Mm-hmm.
When the last Freedom Bird, and it was a Braniff airline, the last Freedom Bird that landed there.
Is that right?
Yeah. Great blue colors. I said, I got that one. I'm going to kiss that plane. That goes to my home. I want to be.
Well, tell me about your first company assignment, where you were, and what your tasks were.
We got there about 12 o'clock, about midnight, and I remember shutting the air conditioning off and opening that door. Man, that just friggin' humidity we were soaked. And the smell, my God, war stink. You think a feedlot stinks?
Here in Lubbock. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know. And so they came up and they took us and they said, okay, fine. Said, your baggage will be, said, go to the, we walked to the, they said, what was it? G9s and above, go off plane first, Said, if you're what was it? 06 or G9 or above, we'll go off first. Of course, the ones that's first few rows, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then the rest of us went off, and we walked over to the terminal. Got halfway to the terminal, and somebody yelled out, mail call! And then all hell broke loose. I know what luckily I knew what that mail call was.
What did that mean?
Mail call means Charlie was sending you a little greeting present, sending you some mail. We started getting mortar attack.
And what did you guys do?
And they told us, they said, if we start getting incoming and everything, said, head for there. They had bunkers and everything.
Yeah.
I knew. I mean, I started flying when I was 16 years old. I know what aviation fuel does when it ignites.
Right, so you got that.
You know what I mean? So I got
out of there.
Assholes and elbows. If you can hear it, it's not going to hit you.
Right.
So, I mean, that's... And when I was at El Paso, they came out and they told us, they said, well, I got there right before the 4th of July, so I was on M reception station on the 4th of July weekend. And that first night there, they came up and they said, okay, fine, we had just got $25. They said, okay, the company area that you're restricted to the company area. Company area is this building, certain buildings. You cannot go to this building. This is the teen center. Why not? I'm 19, I'm a teenager. No, you're not. You're a man.
Hmm.
I didn't realize until I was, that day what he was talking about. Hey, quit, you're grown up now. You're doing a bad job. You got to act like a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out very quickly why they blouse you. You know why they make you blouse your boots?
No.
So if you shit your pants, it doesn't go all over the place.
Really? I didn't know that.
Excuse my language. Wow. You're going to have... No, I mean, that's... I've heard that, But I mean, it just makes it easier to clean up, And no, really, the reason they blouse your pants because one thing it lifts meter, another thing, everything. You're working around aircraft and everything like that. It's not going to get caught. You jump down and everything like that.
Right.
But I mean, mainly neatness and everything like this. And,
But
the scuttlebutt.
I believe it.
And I mean it. Voice of experience, it works. It works.
So you were assigned to the...
I was assigned, got to 22nd replacement.
Okay. Which was like a holding company.
Which was the replacement company, right.
Yep.
And I got there, and this is about 1 o'clock in the morning, and they come out and they said, the following people fall out over here. And they called me and 12 other guys out, our names out. And I said, okay, fine. I said, you go over there. So we went in and had our records, got processed in. By 6 o'clock the next morning, we were at our unit. We was at our brigade headquarters.
Which was where?
Which was, brigade was Long Bend, 12th Group. I was further assigned to Bearcat, which I got to Bearcat. There was 12 of us that went through, but I was held over about a week, 10 days in basic because I'd gone to OCS and they were trying to decide whether. The only reason I didn't go to OCS, they had 22 openings. I was number 23.
Okay. So you had an extra set of days.
I was in charge of some details of the new company because, not because you deserve it, because you've been in longer than those assholes have.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I was still a one striper, mm-hmm. just like they were. But yet I had 2 extra months
seniority.
Yeah, 2 months in rank.
Right.
But anyway, so when I went to Alabama, there's a guy that was in third. I was in second brigade, and third brigade had graduated. And so the guys that were going to Alabama, we went there. So there was 12 of us that went to El Paso and Rucker together. And we all, graduated together and everything,
mm-hmm.
And we got to Vietnam. We got to 1st Brigade. There's only me and 3 other guys, 2 other guys, that made it back. So the rest, we got... And they told us, they had the buddy system. They told us, they says, buddy system is you go to the same basic, go through the same IT, and you go and say, well, they found out at the buddy... You started depending on your buddies, to watch your back. And they said, oh, he'll watch it. And then they said, oh, he'll watch it. Then you get killed. So they started breaking them up when they get into the units.
Right. And is that what happened? They broke you guys
they
up?
They broke us up.
Yeah. And
I went down to Bearcat, 240th Aviation, Greyhounds. We had the permission from the... We had the letter from the Greyhound corporate offices and everything giving us permission to use the Greyhound, and our unit in Sydney was the Greyhound bus, the Greyhound dog.
The dog, yeah. What was the work, essentially, what was the mission of the 240th?
The 240th, what we did, we supported American and Allied troops in interdiction of enemy soldiers.
In what area?
In 3rd Corps and 4th Corps.
Okay.
We supported, I was 2 different units first year I was there. So both years I was there in 2 different units,
mm-hmm.
But 4 units in 2 years, people say, man, you must have been screwed up. And I said, no, I just...
They were because the units. They were all helicopter assault units,
right.
As far as I know.
Yes.
And you were doing maintenance. Repair.
Well, we were, like last company I was in. I was in the last combat unit came back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
So we were in the Vietnamization process. So therefore, they would send unit. It's very, very good. You got to work. You'd go to sleep at night having 6 months left in country, and wake up the next morning, and you're going home. Because of the drop and everything.
Right. But the skills that you had were at an absolute premium, I would have thought.
Oh, yes.
They probably couldn't train. I'm going to guess they couldn't train.
We were supporting at the 240th and everything. We had, our sister company was 135th Aviation,
mm-hmm.
and it was half American Navy and our American Army and half Australian Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was B Company 135th, and I was looking through the web search, mm-hmm. and I found the website for it
for that unit.
For that unit.
Wow.
So, but anyway, this is several months ago. So, I mean, you know, it's nice to find, you know,
find those guys,
find those units there, and everything like this and everything.
And they're organized.
Yeah. And so, like, we had some Vietnamese pilots that we would train.
Yeah.
You know, but mainly, whenever I first got out there, we were supporting the 9th Infantry Division. And the Thai Army.
Did you spend any time in flight yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me the circumstances?
Okay. Well, I stayed there for... I got there and I was a Hawk mechanic, which was a Charlie model gunship. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I went out here to the airport one time, and one of the guys came up and he says, "You look familiar. What's your name?" He was, he and I was in the same...
That's weird.
Same squad.
I love that stuff. That's
in
so
Vietnam.
Cool.
I didn't say anything to him, but I recognized him.
That's cool.
You know.
Love that kind of stuff.
Not that we were enemies or anything like that.
But you it's know, just what, interesting.
You know, what I mean? But we ran into... Yeah, you know, and when I worked out here at Reese, ran into a guy that I was in basic training with.
That's wild.
So, but anyway, now I was there for like 2 months, and then they stood the big red one down, and so they took me and another one officer and sent us to brigade, and then there was 12 of us. You remember the movie Dirty Dozen?
Yeah.
We called ourselves the Dirty Dozen because for 72 hours, 48 hours, we couldn't take a shower. Oh, God, we stunk.
Jeez, how bad.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, and so we got sent to 173rd Soft Helicopter Company.
And you stayed with the 173rd for the rest of this first tour,
right?
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you were doing the same thing.
Right. I went from being a hall mechanic. I was worked on slick platoon, slick helicopters, which were the transport supply helicopters.
Right. So not the gunships.
Not the gunships.
Mm-hmm. Were those helicopters any more demanding of maintenance, the delivery ships?
Really, really. Well, okay, I take that back. You know what? I did work on the Hogs because we worked Hogs and Slicks. We did.
At the 173rd?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we did have some. Well, I mean, we were a squadron, 15 helicopters.
Right, right.
One gun platoon. Two slick platoons, white, yellow, yellow flight and white flight. I was yellow flight, second platoon.
So you had to work shifts essentially. Did you work?
No, what we did, we'd get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and work until.
Oh, okay.
Not normally 5 o'clock at night. No, okay. But I mean, you know, we. Let's see, I got there in January. In March, I got transferred to Lycay 173rd.
Mm-hmm.
I worked from March until last of April. I'm trying to think, because it was like April, May 1st when we went into Cambodia. I guess until the 16th of May, I worked maintenance. And like what we do and everything, we'd... If we had a slick, we'd work the slick. If we had a gunship, we'd work the gun. Gunships had more. There was more demanding maintenance. It had two hydraulic systems, because you can't fly it with one hydraulic system.
So there was more to repair.
More to repair.
If something went wrong.
If something went wrong and everything like this, mm-hmm. The blades were wider, bigger. Wider, heavier.
Did the repair?
Anything was like, we finally got Mike models in, which what they did is they took the original Charlie models had L9 engines. Whenever you go in for 10,000 flat hours, they
right.
go in there and strip it down and redo it and everything. Mm-hmm. And I made it a bike. The only difference was is I put an L13 engine, which is the same engine as what the Slick had. So, I mean, which really is better, because that way you got 15 helicopters with all the same engine.
Standardized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't have to worry about it.
Did you guys have repairing and the maintenance crews? Did you have everything you needed? Did you always have enough parts, always have what you needed?
We really didn't know what was going on, because we really started getting parts and everything. And then 2 days later, about a week later, we went into Cambodia.
Let me ask you a little bit about that. How long were you over in Cambodia? Do you know?
From May 18th until August.
And where were you?
We never did stay in Cambodia. We'd fly in there and then fly, you know.
Okay, so you would go in as a crew, as a maintenance crew?
I started flying the 18th of May.
Okay.
Is because I take that back. I started flying the 15th, because we had just come back from a mission, and I got to my room and put my helmet up and everything like that.
Yeah.
And the guy across the hall from me had TV, and the news zone said Lubbock, Texas was hit by 3 tornadoes.
No kidding. You actually heard that while you were out there?
I mean, I was at YK and everything.
That must have scared you.
Oh, I was more worried about mom and dad than I was me.
I'm sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, well, they said it went downtown, and dad worked part-time at Sears, and Sears was City Hall then, Now it's City Hall. So I was more worried about, was dad working? And, of course, I know they said if a tornado comes up, they'd always go to the bottom, get an alert. But, I mean, if it hits... from what I hear and everything like this, Lubbock tornadoes and tornado hit the shelter and that was it. You know what I mean? They didn't have time.
Right.
So that's what I was afraid of.
Did you? How did you find out that? I'm going to guess that everyone was okay.
Yes.
How did you find out? How long did it take for you to find out?
Like the next day. Luckily, one of the guys in my avionics that worked on the avionics. He worked in the Mars radio station there at Black Hay. He was working that night, and we was only allowed one Mars call a month.
Right.
And I'd already made mine. So I called him up and explained the situation to him, and he was nice enough to get me through. I tried to call mom and dad. The phones were out. I gave her, my grandmother was living at Anton.
Mm-hmm.
They called her. They couldn't get her. They couldn't get her. The operator kept saying, this is the long-distance operator, Mars operator. I'm calling. Paul Wright is calling her, especially, to talk, And she kept thinking that they were asking for me.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I could hear her, but she couldn't hear me because I was in the receive mode.
In
one way.
You were in receive mode.
Yeah, I was in the receive mode. So they couldn't, I couldn't hear her. And so I went back, I told my platoon sergeant about it. And so the next morning, after formation, they took me off the flight. And after formation, the CO sent his helicopter, they had orders waiting for me. And I was getting ready to land at Camp Alpha there at Thompson Nook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they called up and they said, we've heard from the Red Cross, parents are alive, tell me. So I couldn't come up, which I'm kind of glad, because I wouldn't have really, when I left there, I wanted to, not have to go back.
Absolutely.
No,
but it would have been
it
was a pretty frightening situation to be in.
Really, that night and everything, it was worse and everything. And I come up, and in fact, I remember I say, I don't drink. And those people say, well, why don't you drink, And in fact, I had a maintenance sergeant, my platoon sergeant, first platoon sergeant during Vietnam, tell me, he said, you're either a doper or a drunk. And I said, what if I'm neither? And he said, man, you're going to be lonely.
Hmm.
And that's kind of like, that's really kind of true, because you either, got drunk or you got high.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of drug use?
Yeah, I did.
What was the most?
Not really. I did not think I saw as much drug use as in some other. This may sound prejudiced, but I don't think aviation, we had a higher IQ. You had to have a higher IQ to get into aviation than you did in anything in infantry or artillery or something like that.
That's right.
You know, I mean, if you didn't have a high school diploma, they wouldn't even consider you. Yeah.
So those, you would say that there's probably less.
There was
abuse
less abuse. They, you know, than say like in a line unit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, of course, how smart do you have to be a cook? But I mean, you know. But I mean, I'm just saying on the average.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. I mean, I did see it. we went to. We had to go to had the IG come through. First Sergeant and I didn't get along too good, and so he's afraid I'd go to the IG and complain to the IG
about whatever
shit going on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is my unit. I'll run it any goddamn way I want to, and you don't fucking like it, you can kiss my ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they come up at a court-martial, and they say, you remember the inside of the court-martial, because you're going to be next.
They would say stuff like that.
They said it to me personally.
Well,
So we went, and one of the other guys that got transferred from when they were building the company up, because whenever they stood the big red one down, they took a bunch of people home.
Yes.
So they had to build the company back up.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we stopped off. We went and got our ammunition that we needed and like the ammunition we used during the big stuff, like the rockets, and the rockets was usually hauled in by the Chinook or Chinook. And we had like the flares.
Yes.
Survival flares.
Mm-hmm.
The little 22 flares. Hand grenades, you know, little smaller, and, you know, little stuff, you know, that we didn't use much of and everything. Like, you know, it was really funny because we had a grease gun, and we went into Long Bend one time. They wouldn't let us take the grease gun. I said, why? They said, it's an unauthorized weapon. So this is issued to us. So we know you're in the field, but yet at Long Bend it's an unauthorized weapon. You know what I mean? You know.
Stuff like that was going on.
Yeah, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being that since we were working with the Arvin unit, and so I mean we got a lot of stuff that other American units didn't have.
Yeah, may not have had. Yeah.
You know.
Let me ask you about the whole Cambodian episode.
Okay.
First of all, were you thinking about whether this was a good idea for the United States or not?
I thought at the time it was a good idea. Yeah, get it. You know, here. You know, I personally think we should have bombed the hell out of Hanoi. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Political.
That there were political restrictions and...
Right. Well, I mean, you know why? You know what? If the President of the United States comes up and says, we are not going to bomb any public stadium, how, you know, all this stuff and everything, where the hell are you going to put your supplies?
Right.
You sure as hell ain't going to put it in a military dump. You know, come on.
Did you guys think that at the time? Were you guys
yes.
talking about that at the time?
Yes.
Wow.
We were talking about how stupid, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you thought it was a good idea to go into Cambodia and try to clear out the
right.
VC refugees.
But yet we were stopped again. Because actually, and everything, if you look, I don't remember. Now, if you can believe in Newsweek, you know, but what? Walking, you know what I mean. But I mean, I remember reading a deal and everything, looking some known, confirmed areas
right.
of NDA. Mm-hmm. And, what were the Cambodian communists called? Anyway,
the Khmer Rouge. And
Khmer Rouge, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? But I mean, mainly NDA and everything.
Yes.
And then a few, 2 weeks later, or you know, or 2 months later, after we stopped and everything, what it was. And I mean, there was more.
After the Cambodian.
After the Cambodian deal, excursion.
That's right.
And I remember, like I said, you said, well, did we have enough supplies and all that? Well, you know, for a while we did. We had, I mean, we had 100% availability of I think out of 30 helicopters, we only had two down. And that was to getting every 100 hours, we had to do maintenance, you know.
Yeah.
So that was only, so I mean, we had 28 helicopters up, and I mean, 4:30 in the morning, usually we took off that. You know, sun up 5:30, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
7:30. You know, we'd have formation at 7 o'clock. We'd see the helicopters. You know, we'd have them and everything.
Right.
I mean, you know, 4:30 in the morning. Here goes all. I mean, not only our unit, but the CAD unit too.
It must have been impressive to see those going out. So,
what is impressive is to see sit there and see Puff work out. That is impressive.
Now, explain for someone who doesn't get the reference.
Puff the Magic Dragon is a C-47 with Gatling gun on it, and on both sides. It covers, a bullet will be, and it will cover, how should I put this? Every square, there was a bullet in every square yard of a football field. And I mean, just like, blink!
And just in that amount of time.
Just in that amount of time.
Yeah.
And this happened on Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. 1970. I'll never.
What happened? Can you tell?
I was going on guard duty.
Mm-hmm.
What we kept our. I couldn't understand this. We kept the. We was able to carry the ammunition. As soon as I got over there, I got introduced to ammunition. But no weapon. You know, we're traveling all this and everything like this. No weapon and everything. And I mean, and you get in the buses, and the buses got chicken wire over the deal.
Right, right.
You know, and my God, we in prison? You know, I can see behind a barbed fence and protect and everything, but couldn't find out what that's for. Is because you'd be going down the street, and old cowboys come out, and a cowboy was either a VC or a 12-year-old kid or whatever, somebody that just... Gotta, you know, you want somebody to get killed? Come up with $100 and I'll get you getting killed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Value of life over there was not too high. In fact, you paid more if you killed a popsicle. If you killed a kid, you'd pay less money than you would if you killed a water buffalo. You paid more than what you would if you killed a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Or a poppet sock.
Right. Now, what happened on Thanksgiving?
Well, I was going there, and I've got my ammunition, so I said, well, I have done no time. We got a grab attack. There I am, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, and this stuff and everything like the...
Where were you?
I was standing in front of operations building where we normally had the deal, and I'll never forget it. One of the helicopters, the third quarter flight. In the third quarter flight, every Wednesday, we had, we were supporting the 3rd Infantry Vietnamese Arvin Regiment.
Right, right.
Every morning, every Wednesday morning, we'd pick up the general and fly him out to the different fire bases, Tiger 1, 2, and 3.
Mm hmm. These would be around Lycay?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And then in the afternoon, we'd fly him down to Saigon for the meeting, and we'd pick up the mail, and uh-huh. we'd go to the PX there at
trunching it and pick stuff up and everything. And a lot of times, his meeting got extended.
I don't know what he, you know. Who knows,
right?
You know, who knows? which was all right because that meant we could haul more pogey bait back, and we make money on that.
I'll bet. Yeah.
You want me to explain what pogey bait is?
Sure, go ahead.
Pogey bait is, I was at a Ford unit,
so the only PS we had was for the MACV unit, which is Military Assistance Command Vietnam, and they were the advisors to the Vietnamese units. Well, they only got in about once every 10 days or something like that. Well, we stayed there every night because we, you know, sure. unless we had a ground attack or something like that where we had to fly out, we were back there every night. I had warm water, clean sheets, clean boots. So I mean, you know, real. I wasn't like a ground powder. I went to a grunt. I was a rimp. To a rimp, I was a grunt.
Right. I get
you. Yeah. So I mean, I was in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so what we did is we'd always find out who was going to Saigon, and we'd go, hey, have you used all your beer wine ration? Or, yeah, would you go to the PX and pick this up for me? Or would you, you know, hey, you know, my stereo's coming in from Saigon or from Japan, would you go pick up stuff like this?
Right.
You know, cigarettes, booze.
No women. Right.
No women.
But this was, you could make money.
We could make money on that. By the way we did that and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, they...
You had a little carrying charge or something.
Well, yeah.
I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, carrying charge.
Yeah. For your time and effort.
Yeah. Because it was like here's Camp Alpha and here's the PX. But it's all fenced in.
Right.
So you have to hire a taxi to go all the way around to the PX unless you want to carry all that stuff.
Right, and you're not going to do that.
The longest I carried a duffel bag and everything was from the car to the maybe 50 yards. That's all I ever did.
Well,
that's what I liked about flying. If I had to go anywhere, I knew I was going to fly.
Yeah. Did you feel safe flying?
Yeah. Except one time. But it was just a foggy. We were taking off. It was foggy. And it was early in the morning, and the control tower wasn't known. And I just knew a C-130 was in. I had heard a C-130 saying they were landing in on a resupply mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that we was going to get taxi right out there and went there. Here comes this great big old C-130 with those great big old and hit me the first thing. You know, but I mean, as far as, I got shot at. First day I flew, I got shot at. You know, but anyway.
Can you go ahead and explain and say something about that experience? Can you tell the.
We went into, we went 8 miles into Cambodia.
Yeah.
And our mission that day was to evacuate the village because at 2 o'clock that afternoon, there was going to have a B-52 strike there and completely annihilated that area.
Mm-hmm. So
they sent us in. Well, what we did is we flew in, we picked up, we flew into Quinan, or Quinyan, or however you say it,
mm-hmm.
And we picked up the, Vietnamese soldiers that was going to provide security.
Mm-hmm.
And we flew in combat assault, gunships, live fire, free fire zone. We had dropped them off, secured the area. The Chinooks came in and took all the people.
All the civilians?
All the civilians out.
Mm-hmm. And then did you guys get out of there?
And then we got out and...
Were you under fire as you left as well?
No. they did find, they went in, they found enemy tunnels, supplies, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And then the B-52s
The B-52s came in about 10 minutes. We were gone. We had to stay 3 miles away.
Yeah.
From the Delta, from a B-52. The B-52s fly in a formation of three. You're talking 18 miles from wingtip to wingtip, or from one flight to another, you know what I mean?
Right. And
three, six, nine miles.
So,
you know, because they fly a 9 mile path and just, you know.
Did you actually watch one of those strikes, or can you describe that?
It just, kind of like what you see on TV, you know, the deal, and but you just see the blast, the wave, the blast wave. Just you don't think, you know, you see Hollywood version, you know, the flames and everything. That's a bunch of bullshit. That's gasoline.
But the concussion is what you're.
But the concussion.
Concussion waves.
Because when a bomb goes off, unless it's HE, high explosive, mm-hmm. or Willie Pete,
which is
white phosphorus,
mm-hmm.
you'll know Willie Pete. If you see white start shooting off and burning, that is white phosphorus.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop that stuff burning.
And you guys call it Willie Pete?
We call it Willie Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And but I mean, the waves, it's just like a bunch of dirt, you know, coming up, dust clouds and stuff like that.
Right.
But I mean, you see the concussion wave going along and everything, and I mean, just big trees that
just flat.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
It's it's
toothpicks. Toothpick time, you know.
Right. It must have been.
And
scary, impressive.
Well, I mean, it's a good wow, man. I'm glad I'm not down there.
Yeah.
That's really what you think. You know, man, that's cool. And then you got to take it to man. All right, go ahead, get them in there. And old Charlie was doing, Chuck was doing, and everything was sitting in his bunker laughing at us because it was so deep and so crisscrossed and everything. We weren't doing a goddamn thing except tearing the ground up.
Did you believe that at the that they had these underground works that?
Oh, I knew it. We had tunnels in our unit. Where my unit, old right. tunnels where my unit were.
Right. You mean VC tunnels under
right.
under Lyke? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You guys knew it?
So, well, yeah.
But you understood.
We said, and you go in country play, what they call, before you leave Vietnam, you went to Vietnam replacement.
Right.
VRT.
Right.
Vietnam replacement training.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember mine, they come up and they says, well, it says, you know, no matter what you are, if you're a cook or if you're a musician, if it comes time to shit, you're all infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's why they call it basic infantry training. Because they train you all how to operate as an infantry soldier. Marksmanship, all this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say, Army and Marines, we call Navy and the Air Force trade school. Because they're not soldiers. The only ones that would be soldiers would be like your SEALs or your Black Berets.
The Special Ops guys.
Special Ops guys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those are soldiers.
Let me ask you about coming to the end of your first tour. Were you keeping track, like a lot of guys,
oh,
how many days?
I found my short-timer's calendar.
You did?
Mom had it.
Oh, no kidding.
Mom had it and that stuff I told you about,
mm-hmm.
yes.
So you were keeping
gonna
track.
Edit this.
Well, no, we won't.
Okay. No, I got it. I got down to 68 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When what happened?
I mean,
you can say however much or little about this as you like.
We bypassed Thanksgiving, didn't we?
if you want to talk about...
No, I don't mind that. But
I was sitting there, and it was like, we usually have guard man about 5:30, and we go on guard duty at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is about 5:15, 5:20. I'd already gone to eat, came back, and everything was standing there. And all of a sudden, you hear this little pop, pop. You know, and of course, after, you know, you get over there, after, I've been over there January, what, 9, 10 months?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew what gunfire sounded like. And you really didn't think about it, because at night, anywhere from 5 to 6 o'clock, you had the Arvins would do the perimeter guard. And they'd shoot at anything. Well, they'd test your weapons.
Right.
You know, but it brings your attention, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You see, what's going on? And I saw this little Lambretta going from, let's see, it had to be going, let's say the runway was going north-south, so east. So he was going, okay, which way is the east? Okay. He was going from the southeast to the northwest.
Okay.
Is that right? Yeah, anyway. So it sounded like south to north. You know, our runways went south to north.
Right.
Because we couldn't land into the east or west.
South, right, right.
Mm-hmm. Because of the sun. And when we stood formation, we faced east because the sun would be in our face.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a little Lambretta coming up the road. And a Lambretta is like a three-wheel Cushman. And they use it for taxis over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying about... You know how big a Cushman, three-wheel Cushman is, right?
Yeah, not very.
Yeah. Well, I've seen 15 people on those things.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? You think about sardines.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll put it, that's the nicest way I can put it. Pack like sardines.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, one guy was driving, and there was two guys in back.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in back, one of the guys in the back, facing me, was shooting. And I don't know why. I know he's shooting at me. Or what? I don't know if I saw the flash, the muzzle flash, or what, but I knew it was him. And I guess our company's like halfway down runway. And runway, what, 3,000, 4,000 feet, something like that, whatever C-130 can land in. Because
mm-hmm.
every Wednesday we get C-130s in and get our supplies and, you know, like our helicopter parts and stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
And the other aviation company, we had our company, 1st and 9th, 1st Cav, and then we had an engineering construction, road construction company
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, and then all of a sudden, we was in the middle of the rubber plant, old French rubber plantation.
Right, yes.
Our base was called Sherwood Forest. We were the Robin Hoods.
That's right.
I was Robin Hood 33 Golf. That was my call sign. And, but anyway, all of a sudden, leaves started falling out of the ground, out of the sky, and all this. And it being, I says, you know what? They're shooting at me! And I was about, I don't know, 10, 15 feet away from the bunker, from the building. And we had sandbags 3 feet up. Side of the deal, it was about, I don't want to say 6 inches, but I don't think I was ever slim enough for 6 inches. But when you're getting shot at, it's surprising what you can get. You can fit it. Yeah. So I say about a foot away, or you know, about 2 or 3. Anyway, I jumped over that and got the deal.
and they were shooting us up and everything. I'll always remember this. One of the helicopters was coming back, landing after third core flight, and I'll remember hearing this on the radio. They called up and they says, "Are y'all under attack?" And he was hovering there. And I mean, when you fly in, you figure that all the helicopters over there are armed. Except, well, some of the medevacs were,
right.
But mostly, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, but all our helicopters and most of the unit.
He's sitting right there.
Right. Most of the unit was back, and so I mean, we had like at least 30 machine guns out there on the flat line. You know what I mean? And plus the 10 or 12 from the gunships, you know what I mean? And here's this. But when you get into the pattern, you have to take the ammunition out of the gun. Secure it.
Right.
For safety factors.
Sure.
So here he is, sitting there, getting shot at. You know. And so I remember and says, are y'all under attack? They said, yes, we are. And you are not supposed to, you have a torque meter on a Huey, and it's not supposed to go over 50%.
Right.
That pilot said it went up to 100, over 100%. He just, because of the humidity over there and everything, it takes time to get up.
Yes.
Usually you go forward and build your deal up.
And he just pulled it up out of there?
Straight up. Twisted the shit out of it. Wow. Twisted.
I bet he did too.
Twisted the tail. We had to take it down Saigon and ship it back to the States. But,
what happened to you? He's moving up and out, and what happened?
I hit behind the deal.
Behind the sandbags.
Behind the sandbag. So he didn't get hit, and I know. And the gunners finally. I guess I don't know whether the pilot told them to do it or they thought it, and they were in my platoon. But they finally got the flying south. So the crew chief, the left gunner, he finally got his machine gun into position, into action. And of course everybody on the fly line, the maintenance officers out there running around with the little 38, you know, like this and everything, and I'm thinking, Yeah, you're dumb. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he's running out there like John Wayne, you know, come on, let him, you know. Yeah, man, yeah, right, yeah. And so me, and I'm thinking, I forgot my ammunition. Only one there except for the flat line. And so one platoon sergeant, he says, shoot at him. And I said, I don't have any ammunition. So he threw a bandolier of ammunition. Mm-hmm. Bandolier, 7 clips, 140 rounds.
Right.
20, you know, at that time we didn't get the 30. We didn't get the banana clips until, like to say.
Yeah, in your second.
You know, second tour or something like that. Or
that's
if we had banana clips, say we're out in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't giving them to you.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of stuff, you know. We had a lot of guys when a lot of the AD unit was down, or infantry units were stood down, mm-hmm. The guys that were still left over there. Oh, you know how to shoot a machine gun? Oh, you'll be a great gunner. You know what I mean? And so, you know, they did. They come and everything. I mean, you know, if they were on jump pay, they got the same amount of jump pay.
Right, right.
They just didn't have to jump out of the helicopter, you know, mm-hmm. And get shot at. So they got shot at on the helicopter. So anyway, I put the deal in, and you know it's kind of. I thought I'd be gung ho and everything like this. You know what? That's scary. Wondering, taking every step, and wondering, yeah, am I going to get hit? Am I going to get? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I went out there and everything. And I landed beside beside one of the helicopters and everything like this. And I told him, I said, shoot the son of a bitches! You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah. And he says, who? And I said, the little Beretta, shoot it! And hearing everything,
And here all this time I had a loaded weapon, didn't even fire a shot.
But it sounds like you were the one who knew where the firing was coming from.
You know, and nobody else knew where it was, but I don't know why. And I mean, I'm not John Wayne. The sergeant had put, the sergeant says, get out there, you know. I mean, really, that is tough getting out of a safe place.
I bet.
You know, knowing and running and everything like this. And, you know, if you can hear it, you know you're not dead. You know, it's not for, you know, the one, well, I mean, really, the one that gets you is the one you don't hear. You know. Because, I mean, my God, they're going 660 feet a second. Mm-hmm. You know. And it's not like the rocket that blew me off top of my helicopter is the one that I didn't hear. I heard the one that hit before it and after it. Not the one.
Was that in the second tour?
No, that's first July 5th, 1970. So, I mean, but anyway, that was Thanksgiving. So we went to... And eventually how they killed me, and you know, and I think one of the reasons I didn't want to shoot is because a few days before we had some drunk Arvin had fired us up at night. And what I mean by fired us up, they shot at us. And so I mean,
you're on edge anyways, probably.
Right. You know what I mean? And so I mean, you know, we opened up and a bunch of civilians had got killed in this change or wounded. And
this was just a couple of days before.
They come up and they says, you know, if you kill any more civilians, you're going to be court-martialed, you know? Well, I didn't want to, you know, kill civilians.
Right. Right.
And so that's what you're thinking about. I think that's part of the deal. But, you know.
Interesting.
Yep. But anyway, later on that night, we got hit. It was about 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock, something like that.
With mortars or? Do you know what
everything?
Else it was? Everything.
And I saw they were burning trash over in Lackey, and you can see, you know, I mean, it's surprising how much you can see that lights up tonight, you know. And I saw somebody move. Something moved. I just thought it was. Like, you know, you can't judge distance. Pitch dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, so pitch dark, I've gotten as close from here to you, to people, and they wouldn't know I'm there. You know. And that's scary. Yeah. But anyway, I saw something and everything, and I didn't think anything about it. Like I said, I thought it was just somebody walking in front. And then I heard the PSP, plate, steel plank. They take steel planks and put them together and make runways.
Yes.
Portable runways.
Yes.
I heard that.
You heard it?
Yeah.
The plates knocking?
The plates knocking. And I looked and see something. And, you know, the standard deal is, halt! Halt! Who goes there? Halt or I'll fire! Fire! Halt! Bullshit! I clipped automatic and pointed, you know. Halt! Boom, there goes a helicopter 25 feet away from me.
What'd you do?
Well, I'll put it this way, I had to clean my britches.
I can believe it.
But fired him, killed him. I don't know whether the shrapnel from him got it or whether I killed
him. Whether it was your bullet, but anyway, you were prepared.
I fired. And what I did, what saved me from getting, I guess, the shrapnel and everything, is I had squatted down behind a revetment. So I was looking, because you know that revetment stops bullets a lot, takes bullets a lot easier than me.
And that's the point of a revetment, is
that's
to protect
right.
the aircraft.
Right.
But also you
right.
in this case.
So, and then we killed that, and then a few minutes later, we had one of the wire on the east side, west side was breached. I mean, big enough.
our first sergeant was 6'5", and they went there the next day and took pictures, and the hole in the wall was bigger than him.
Do you have any recollection or knowledge of what happened in that breach? That there must have been a firefight over there.
Oh yeah, there was a firefight. We went on alert and everything. And
did you stay where you were though?
Yeah, I was on guard duty.
Yeah, so you just stayed where you were.
But what we did, we had reactionary force, and the reactionary force, what it is like we had one guard for every 5 revetments.
Right.
Yeah, reactionary guard every revetment or every other revetment had somebody there.
Right.
So like every 50 to 100 feet,
yeah,
you had somebody there. They bounced our helicopter, our gunships. They bounced the first and ninth cav helicopters, gunships. They were a hunter killer company. Hunter killer is a Cobra and a Loach. Mm-hmm. Loach would go down and draw the fire, and then the Cobra would come in. We did the same thing with a Slick and a Cobra. And anyway, they bounced them.
When you say bounced, what do you mean?
They took off, okay, fully armed. Mm-hmm. They were flying down. It was a mile from the center of the runway to the fence. Mm-hmm. They would fly down the center. About 100 feet up, 200 feet up, no, 100 feet up, 50 to 100 feet up.
Wow.
They'd fly down the center of the dale, firing their rockets, guns.
At the perimeter.
At the perimeter. They come up and they tell us that the engineering company was being evacuated. So basically, it was almost overrun. I mean, you know, they hit them. I mean, they killed 3 guys there in the bunker. They blew the bunker up, one of their bunkers up. So it breached, you know. So anyway, they come up and, I mean, you know, they were fighting and everything. And they told us, they said, there's X number of people. They're coming in their skivvies,
mm-hmm.
you know. Still pop flat vests. They got more skivvies, I would shoot up their enemy. We had Puff flying along. He came down. He's 100 feet over the runway. Told the helicopters, they finally went to rearm. So they flew down the center, and they just, the Gatling gun just going, I got a burn. And they always told her, they said, if you ever get it up where a Puff flies over, put your collar up like this.
Why?
And go down. Because the shells will hit.
Hot shells.
The hot shells.
And
I got a little burn back there, so. Yeah. Burn. Hey, that's why they, you know, that's not bullshit. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Wow.
That's not, you know.
Paula, let's take a break right there.
Okay.